cannot disappear.
Maybe hit him high, but what else can he do? He can't disappear.
In slow motion, it looks a little bit bad, but
accidents happen. They do.
He's done his knees. Well, this is incredible.
Now will come the magic sponge. There it is.
No scissors, no tape. Just a dirty old sponge, and it's worked. The sponge can wipe out a pandemic. It can cure us all.
Yes, welcome back to the Magic Sponge Podcast, a miracle cure for all your rugby league injury issues. I'm Brian Sini. I'm the guy behind the NRL Physio social media pages. My co-host, James, you're back. You're here to just bask in the season-defining victory for the 2023 Premiers, the Mighty Dolphins. How good?
Brian, I was enjoying it because I needed them to get 5 from 5 on the tip, so I was pretty happy to see the contentious penalty awarded. I was doing a few of these. I was pretty good with it. So good to see for the Dolphins getting a W there, mate. And not long now until State of Origin 3. It's a dead rubber, but as you know, being an avid Queensland fan, things are never dead in Origin. They always matter. It's going to be good. Looking forward to it.
Oh, mate, Origin time. It's always a sad part of the year when it's over, and it's definitely getting to that point. I think JT was interviewed today because obviously none of the players are talking, but as he said, you know, people remember those clean sweeps. I do think it's really hard to get a clean sweep. You know, like, so much of Queensland is talked about those little effort areas, you know, those guys chasing through on kicks, running past New South Wales guys who are standing still and stuff like that. I'm like, can Billy keep that hunger there when there's not like a series on the line? It's just the whitewash. And I think back to like even that 2021 series where New South Wales just absolutely clobbered us. And then it came to the third game and we still got a win. And it's kind of like, yeah, I just think it's always hard, eh?
Yeah, it definitely is, but I'm still going to be watching it, enthralled, and really looking forward to it.
Yeah, Matt, absolutely. So as always, guys, this is your one-stop shop for all things injury analysis in the NRL. We'll give you our take on the in-game injuries from the round just gone, review the big injury and rehab news from those already in the casualty ward, all that kind of stuff. And obviously at this time of year, with all of us shooting for that $50,000 and within touch, you know, James and I being the Supercoach experts we are, we're right up the tippity top, of course. We'll give you the tips on the injuries and how that can help your Supercoach and your NRL fantasy team to get you that 50 grand. So if you find yourself getting value out of this content, head on over to patreon.com/NRLphysio. That's where all the good stuff is at. This is just a little sneak peek to everything that you get over there. But otherwise, let's get stuck into the injury wrap for round 19.
I don't know exactly what he's done. I would have thought it was an ankle, but I'm just guessing.
He shouldn't be out for a long period of time. I mean, I'm no doctor. We have to wait for the scans, obviously, but that'd be more positive than negative.
Round 19, Brian, was a bit of bye round footy at its best. We get the best and the worst of the footy during these sort of Origin abbreviated rounds. What we're going to kick off with is we're going to get you to talk to Payne Haas and his ankle tendon inflammation concerns. Do you want to give us a little bit of an update on what you think he's managing from that point of view and how long you're expecting him to be out for? He's obviously going to be missing Origin 3.
Yeah, so apparently he suffered this quite a few weeks ago and just kind of played through. I think there was even some talk it was during Origin 2. Before Origin 2, but then carried it into Origin 2, aggravated it in Origin 2, had scans. Thankfully, it's only shown ankle tendon inflammation, so probably something, you know, a little bit chronic-y that he's flaring up. He has had a syndesmosis repair on that ankle as well, so whether there's some, you know, old scar tissue there potentially contributing. I think the biggest thing here is that, like, the Broncos, you know, whether they've actually released actually what's going on. But if we take them at their word, ankle tendon inflammation, not that big a deal in the grand scheme of things for me. I think you just approach him like you usually would, Payne Haas. The chance, obviously, he's like, it sounds like he's going to miss round 20, or that's what they've said, is they're aiming for round 21. Ankle tendon inflammation isn't something that I would usually go, oh, yeah, you know, he needs, you know, several weeks off kind of thing. So I know this isn't several weeks. Another situation where I reckon if it was a grand final this weekend, he's absolutely playing. Payne is known for, you know, coming back from injuries really, really quickly and all that kind of stuff. So I'm not completely counting him out of round 20 at this stage, but I think the Broncos, with where they're at on the ladder, they were probably already planning on resting him for round 20 if he was fit and firing coming out of Origin, those kind of things. So I wouldn't be surprised if he just has a rest this week and then comes back round 21. I, for other reasons, which we'll talk about in Supercoach Corner, haven't opted to go with him because I needed some numbers for this week. But I think he's still, like, once he's named in round 21, I think you just chase him as hard as you usually would. Are you kind of on the same page?
Yeah, it'd be him or Tino. I think if you have one, you get the other. If you have both, then you're flying, obviously. But I think that would just be personal preference, whether you go Tino or Haas. I've got Tino, have had him for quite a long time. He sort of just has a sneaky try in Tino, doesn't he, compared to Payne in sort of most recent memory. So I think if you do have the cash and you got the trades, then you'd be going for Haas in round 21, I'd reckon would be the good plan.
Yeah, for me, I'm probably, we'll talk about, I'm down to six trades. So I probably don't have the trades in me to shoot for a Payne Haas in the front row. I'm sort of going to shoot for those higher upside positions. Pretty happy, you know, just to sort of sit with some solid guys in the front row and then go big sort of in the halves and the outside backs, I think. But yeah, if you've got the trades, I wouldn't hold off Haas in round 20 or 21 because of his injury.
No, he's just such a gun, isn't he? Second one we're going to talk about, Brian, from the Queensland camp, actually, this time, just changing jersey colours. Jeremiah Nanai had a bit of a picture there with ice on a hip pointer type injury there. You put up a good picture earlier in the week. There is a question about Jeremiah Nanai from Patreon as well, and saying, is there a chance that he could aggravate this hip pointer concern in State of Origin? And what would be the fantasy football implications for Jeremiah Nanai with that in mind as well?
Yeah, definitely. Look, I think the biggest risk of hip pointers is aggravation. Aggravation in game, it only takes a blow to the same spot. It's mainly just super, super painful. Now, that can obviously affect function and those kind of things. So if you cop a hit pointer, you would have seen guys on the field. Sometimes they can barely run. They're sort of hobbling around. They almost, you know, sometimes we've had commentary and stuff like that saying, oh, they think he's done his ACL because he goes, you know, the player goes down untouched, those kind of things. But yeah, just super, super painful. So it is quite sensitive. So it's something he'll probably have padding on. I think James Tedesco had one a couple of seasons ago and he almost had a bum bag sort of wrapped around his hip pointer just to try and give it as much protection as possible. But that is a real concern heading into the game, is that he cops a blow to it and then, you know, he's ruled out. His threshold for what would rule him out will just be lower, where, you know, fully fit and healthy, he could cop a really big blow to that hip and probably not be affected. But here, you know, it might only need to be a 30-40% as significant and it will really affect him. Probably from a Supercoach fantasy perspective, it doesn't really concern me all that much. I know I've just spoken about the aggravation risk, but the one thing I think is I would be surprised if he does back up sort of, you know, for the Cowboys. I think it's short turnaround. He's probably going to come out of the game. Like, he's not going to get through the game without aggravating it at all. Like, surely he's going to make some tackles and make some runs where he cops some contact around that area. So you'd think with the short turnaround into the weekend that he'd probably just have a bit of a rest for round 20. And then be back around 21. So I think if you're a Nanai buyer, which I know there were a few last weekend, there definitely is a good chance that you'll be without him in round 20 if that hip gets aggravated even slightly.
Yeah, it's a good point you make. He's very attractively priced for standard purposes. So given that he's come off the back of 80-80, 100-point scores, he's someone that I was looking at fairly closely, but he may well be more like around 21 prospect as well if you've got the trades up your sleeve and you're looking for someone who's a bit of a point of difference in the second row there. Any other things you'd want to mention about Jeremiah Nanai, Brian, before we move forward to the weekly round?
No, I think buy-wise, I'm sure coming off 80-80, 100, I don't have his break even in front of me at the moment, but I'm sure it's quite low. So I wouldn't be totally against if an hour before the game in round 20, he still is named to start. I wouldn't be against sort of getting him in because the attacking upside, not relying on Jeremiah Nanai to carry the ball 20 times in a game or make 40 tackles. You're looking for those two or three plays in a red hot Cowboys side. So yeah, I think he's a little bit different in that when he is named with a hit pointer, usually I'd have a little bit of hesitation in terms of, you know, buying, but with a low break even in a really good Cowboys side with the style of play he has, where you're not relying on, you know, big workloads, I still think he's fine to buy.
Very good, Brian. We'll move forward to the NRL games this week, just gone then. So first one was Tigers v Sharkies. No injury concerns out of that one. So we're going to make a beeline to the Dragons v the Raiders here. It's actually a pretty entertaining game of rugby league football, this one. Four injury concerns we've got listed here, all for the poor old Dragons. So Jaden Sullivan with a hamstring concern. He was sniped from the crowd with how that hamstring sort of pulled up there in the chase through from the line break. Jacob Liddell had a head knock, Paul Turner with a back concern, and Ben Murdoch-Masilla with a knee concern. Do you want to give us the rundown on the injury prognosis for those four Dragons players, Brian?
Yeah, probably the two most interesting, Jaden Sullivan and Paul Turner. Jaden Sullivan, obviously a hamstring, but the history there, like, he has had several hamstring injuries over the past three seasons. And this is for a guy who, you know, has played a lot of New South Wales Cup, you know, into, you know, coming into NRL, then back to New South Wales Cup and all that kind of stuff. The reason I mention that is because we don't often get, you know, crazy media coverage of injuries in New South Wales Cup. So the fact that we know that this guy has had so many hamstring injuries and he's been playing a bit of cup says to me that, yeah, there definitely is an issue there, an ongoing issue there for him. So he's in a bit of a, you know, a bad, like, I guess a bad pattern of hamstring injuries. You know, you look at Tom Trbojevic, these guys who have had those repeated issues, you know that the re-injury risk is quite high. So, yeah, look, like, by video, he was running quite quickly, so you worry about that moderate grade strain, you know, 4 to 6 weeks. But with the Dragons, you know, where they're at, Jaden Sullivan being a young, you know, up-and-comer, I don't see them rushing him back. So I wouldn't even be surprised if they just go, look, your season's over. Let's just leave it at that and rehab you for next year. And then Paul Turner with his back injury, I think the biggest thing there is, you know, there was concern by video, you know, for internal organ injuries. It's not something I usually like to tweet, you know, at the time to sort of, you know, increase any concern or worry or anything like that. But, you know, with where he got kneed, you know, it's in around the kidneys. You're talking about the lower section of the lungs. You've even got your spleen in around there as well. They're all things that we've seen NRL players have injury to from knees in the back that have caused fractured ribs or things like that. So by all accounts, it was just all precautionary and they weren't worried about internal organs. But yeah, it didn't look nice at the time. So good to hear that, you know, the initial reports were he was okay. Yeah, look, rib fracture, you know, you can get a lower back fracture as well of the, that sounds nasty, but it's usually the spinous process or the transverse process, little bones that stick out of the spine that aren't structural as such, just more pain tolerance kind of thing. So I think with them, Tyrell Sloan should be back either next week. Oh, they've got the bye actually, don't they? So he should be back.
Yeah, he
should be back by their next game. So and look, with Paul Turner, you'd usually think somewhere in that 3 to 4 week range he'd be good to come back. So he'd be a chance for their next game, but more likely the games after. Jacob Little with his head knock, stay down for a little bit there, but the telecast didn't really show too much of that, unfortunately. So I'm not really sure. It was in the final moments, so we didn't really get, you know, was he stumbling around or anything like that? Not really sure. So he'll have to go through the protocols and we'll hear what comes of that. And then, or not the protocols, the testing, I should say, and we'll hear whether he's got a concussion. And then Ben Murdoch-Masilla, another one in the final minutes. The video wasn't fantastic on that, so unfortunately I can't give much insight there. So, yeah, we'll have to wait and see what the Dragons come back with.
Anything else to add from my point of view, Brian? So next game was the Eels versus the Warriors. Dylan Walker only concerned over this one with an arm injury. I didn't catch this. Did you get any specifics about that?
Yeah, once again, like, the video wasn't great. They did say it almost looked like kind of like a hyperextension kind of thing, but they did say post-game that he should be fine. Like, he was going to go for scans, but they were pretty confident it was just precautionary. So I think, provided that nothing crazy comes out of the scans, he should be all good.
Very good. Rabbitohs versus Bulldogs next. Good win by the Bulldogs coming off a 66-point drubbing the week before. So good to see them back in the winner's circle, albeit against an understrength Bunnies. Two injury concerns. So Ryan Sutton with a neck concern. It was pretty scary scenes with this on the field with him getting taken off in the Medicab there. And then also Joe Ockengaui had a knee concern. You had some good video of that as well, Brian. So I'll get you to detail those two guys.
Yeah, Wright and Sutton, really concerning at the time. Like, obviously, you know, Medicab out there, then taken a hospital post-game, all that kind of stuff. Thankfully, he has come out this morning via, once again, friend of the show, my best mate on Twitter, Phil Gould. No fractures in the neck, no concussion diagnosed, and he's getting precautionary MRI to check disc/nerve issues, but they're pretty confident that that's going to come back all good as well. So, yeah, for a pretty concerning scene, it just sounds like a really bad burner, which can be super concerning, right? Like, you can have pain going down, you know, pain, pins and needles, numbness going down both arms into your hands. You can lose feeling in them, those kind of things. So it can be quite nasty, but thankfully it's come back, you know, coming back good so far. I think the interesting thing here, and I know Demetrio just absolutely word saladed this and did not do it justice at all, because like, he deserves the criticism that he's got for the way that he worded it all and stuff like that, but I think there is a point to what he was saying. It's just he did it in a horrible way, because at the end of the day, I don't think it was the tackle from Tane Milne that caused the damage here. Like, it was absolutely, in terms of your mechanism of what you're looking for that kind of injury, you are looking at Tevita Totola when he came in and Sutton's head was down and Totola came down on top of it and effectively just performed like a really rapid crusher. And that's why we worry about crushers, because they can do this stuff. Now, I'm not saying that was a crusher. It was just one of those things that happened. His head was down, Totola came in and just knocked him, and that's what happened. But absolutely, Tane Milne was sent, and part of him being sent was the fact that there was an injury there, and I don't think it was Milne's fault that Sutton suffered an injury. But the one thing I will say about Tane Milne, if you go back and watch the video, he was off both feet. Both feet were in the air and his shoulder hit the guy's chin. So, like, this is the thing, is I'm not saying what Demetrio said was absolutely correct and, you know, he absolutely nailed it and all that kind of stuff, because he was kind of half right. Like, yes, the injury played a role for sure, and it was probably incorrectly played a role because it wasn't Tane Milne's fault that the injury occurred, but also Tane Milne's tackle technique there was woeful. Absolutely woeful, and Tane Milne has a history of woeful tackle techniques. So I've got no problems with Tane Milne going to the bin there, but I also think that there was a little bit of confusion. And look, it's going to be hard because you can't really expect bunker officials to be all across that. Oh yeah, like, it's likely Tevita Totola, you know, caused that via the injury mechanism. They're not going to have the knowledge to sort of, you know, put two and two together there, and you shouldn't expect them to do that. But yeah, I just thought that was, yeah, it was an interesting point because, yeah, Demetrio kind of had something, like, he had something there, but he just was, yeah, just described it horribly, and it came off really, really badly. How did you see it? Did you sort of think Totola as well?
Yeah, I do agree with you with that sort of force, like hyperflexion type mechanism, I think. And what was Demetrio's words? I think he said something along the lines, I'm sort of paraphrasing here, that he sort of stayed down. But I think clearly Ryan Sutton was hurt. Whether that contributed to the decision to sin bin Tane Milne or not, I don't really know. I don't think it's the worst sin bin I've seen. I think, you know, if there's high contact, it probably wasn't the cause of the neck concern as such. But if, you know, there's high contact like that in a front-on tackle where he's got to lower the hitting zone, I'm pretty happy to live with that, to be honest. I don't think it was an egregious sin bin at all from that perspective, hey?
No, and I think he did say, like, stays down with injury. And, like, yeah, if you're talking about, like, I think what he meant or what he should have said is the fact that someone suffered an injury has contributed to the sin bin, rather than, like, stays down or lies down. Like, putting that in there, just, like, with a guy who's just gone off to hospital, was just not a good look and sounded horrible, was not a good way to word it. So, yeah, I thought that part of it, like, he had a legitimate talking point, but at the end of the day, it was just really, yeah, the way that he addressed it was no good. So I think at the end of the day, thankfully Ryan Sutton's all good. Tane Milne deserved to get sent to the bin for poor tackle technique, but Tevita Totola probably caused the injury. Joe Offengawi with the knee. This is interesting for you and I particularly, and any physios or, you know, anyone out there who was watching and knew what was going on with those knee tests that the trainer or the physio was doing out on the field. I just found it really interesting that, look, he performed the ACL and the MCL stress test, so he was, you know, trying to feel for any looseness in the knee there. He obviously felt something because he did the whole nut gone, you know, cut the head off, like he's out, see you later. So he's straight off. He's not real happy about it at the time. I think he sort of, you know, mouthed to the trainer, like, what the hell is it? Like he wasn't real happy. But then post game, Brad Arthur came out and said the only good thing that came out of that game was Joe Offengawi isn't injured at all. So to come out of a trainer sort of doing knee tests, giving you the cutthroat like you're gone, but then to have no injury, like I'm assuming they mean like not, like I'm thinking they might mean like no ACL damage potentially. If there's no MCL damage as well, then I don't know what was happening in those tests, because for the physio to sort of feel that, be like, oh yeah, that's quite loose, give him the cutthroat, but then have it come back no injury is, yeah, that's pretty crazy to me anyway. The only thing I can think of is Joe O is new to the club. Potentially he has, you know, in inverted commas, loose knees inherently. Like maybe he has, you know, loose knee ligaments, and potentially the physio had never tested his knees before. So, you know, tested just the one knee, went, oh, that's a bit loose, took him into the sheds and then tested the other one and went, oh, actually you've got loose knees regardless. That's the only thing I can think of. I mean, can you think of anything from that perspective?
Yeah, I'd agree with you on those points. From the naked eye, from the footage that you put up, it did look like there was a little bit of translation there. It didn't look like there was like that really, you know, like you see that fairly firm end feel and there's not a lot of translation in, you know, the average person, particularly when you're dealing with like an athlete that's quite big. Like you don't often get those guys that have those, you know, hypermobility syndromes or those connective tissue things that do have, you know, that extra bit of translation through a few of their joints when you test like an ACL and a knee and things like that. I'm not really too sure. It looked a little bit suspicious to me, but they've come out and said, no, all sweet, no dramas. Maybe the only thing where it looks like there's more translation, unless he's got an underlying PCL injury that he's just PCL deficient, maybe. I don't know. It's quite hard to judge from just seeing it on the video. There is a one-off, isn't it? We don't have hands-on.
Yeah, and I just found, like, even taking the translation out of it, just the fact that the physio went straight to the, nah, he's done. Like, you know, did the tests and immediately it wasn't like a, let's ask the player how he's feeling, you know, all that kind of stuff. He was just like, he's gone. And for me, when I see that, I'm like, okay, he's either torn his ACL or torn his MCL. For the physio to be that quick on the trigger of being like, no, he's gone, I was like, geez, he must have torn. I was thinking more MCL from the mechanism and the testing. But yeah, look, like that's a really interesting one, and we'll see what comes of it in the week ahead.
Yeah, keen to see what comes out of the scans there for Joey O. Hopefully good news for him. Titans versus Dolphins was the last one here. Good to see the Dolphins get the W, Brian, for my tips and your homerisms. So Joey Stimson, concussion out of this one for the Titans. And Jerry Marshall King, another one we're going to talk about again this week. We've got a bit of an update on the shoulder. There's been a bit of a change of scenery there for Jerry Marshall King.
Mate, for about the 10th week in a row, JMK gets a mention on the pod. He's friend of the pod, I think, at this point, with how many times we've talked about him. Very quick on him, ruled out late. The interesting thing, we banged on last week about AC joint, like why would Wayne think the season's over, all that kind of stuff. And then there was an interview with the head of performance or the head of medical at the Dolphins this week where he mentioned that JMK is dealing with some labrum damage, which is the ball and socket joint where the cartilage is in the cup of the shoulder. That usually happens when you have some instability, you know, like a subluxation, dislocation, those kind of things. I thought I was going crazy. I was like, have we misdiagnosed this the entire time? Has it never been referred to as an AC joint issue? I went to the Dolphins website and they've referred to it as an AC joint issue the entire time on the official, Dolphins page. So, look, there's a bit of mixed messaging there, but a labrum tear does make a bit more sense as to why Wayne was sort of saying, oh, potentially he could be out for the year, because a labrum tear is something that you get a shoulder reconstruction for. So that obviously, you know, and players will play through labrum tears until the postseason, then get surgery. So, you know, potentially they're putting something off till the end of the year. Do they try and get him, you know, get him through till the end of the year, then get it done? Do they get it done now? There's a lot of things on the table with that. So, yeah, just worth mentioning with him that the stuff we talked about last week, there might be some complicated things there. And in terms of fantasy super coach purposes, it just makes him even more of an avoid for me. Like, get him, if he's in your team, get him out of your team. The risk of immediate surgery and then out for the year, you know, whether that's worse than an ongoing AC joint injury where your production's going to be down, it's arguable. But yeah, there's just way too much risk there for me, and I'd be off him. I assume you're pretty much the same.
I think when the Dolphins are mathematically out of the final eight, I think that's when they'll pull the trigger there, Brian. Would you think that's a reasonable play?
Yeah, well, that won't be till grand final day, because they're going to make it all the way through. So, you know, potentially he could just keep going until that Broncos-Dolphins grand final.
That's true. Yeah, push him through. Just, what do you reckon? Just a bit of K-tape on there?
No, mate, send him over. Send him over to our man in the US. Get some, you know, get some reconditioning.
We need a shoulder guru. Who's a shoulder guru that's kicking around? Like, Lynn Watson's the big dog in Melbourne, isn't she?
Yeah, but that's not big enough, mate. Get him on a business class. Business class flight over to Europe. There'll be someone somewhere who works with Romanian wrestlers or something. It'll be, they're next.
That's very true. Righto, Brian, that's the wrap-up for round 19 injuries. So we'll go straight into the Patreon question. So as you mentioned earlier, very eloquently, patreon.com/NRLphysio. If you can use the internet, if you're an adult, or if you're someone who's not an adult, you can probably still figure that out. If you want to get more content, if you want to get the answers to your questions, patreon.com/NRLphysio is where you got to be. Question number one, Brian. So, Brian, I know you said you're planning to trade in Nathan Cleary this week or the next. The patron question is, I might have to wait a week with other trades needed. Can you outline the downsides to getting him in straight away? Help me feel better about it with that plan of attack.
Yeah, that's fair enough. You know, like, there's a lot of guys, like, I think everyone's sort of, you know, going to try and bring in the likes of Fifita, Cleary, Latrell, like, bring in all those guns in around the Origin, you know, teams that you want back in your team immediately. So in terms of bringing in Cleary, it is absolutely justifiable to wait a week or two. Like, I think they've got, have they got the Finns this week, I think? I'll just check.
I do have the draw up in front of me.
Yeah, they do. They've got the Finns. So, I mean, you couldn't get a better matchup with how the Finns are playing at the moment, although they did look, you know, great against a very, very gun Titans attack today, like the fact that they held them to such low score, like, amazing defense. But, yeah, look, in terms of injury-wise, there is absolutely justification in waiting a little bit for Cleary. Look, the stats tell us, and this is, we're talking rugby league, rugby union, soccer, AFL, all those kind of things, and at a pro level, the data tells us that between 10 to 15% of athletes or professional players coming back from these injuries, these hamstring injuries, 10 to 15% will re-injure their hamstring in the first or second week back. So you're talking like 1 in 10 guys will re-injure their hamstring in those first 2 weeks. That's a really significant number. That re-injury risk doesn't really exist for any other musculoskeletal injury that high on return, and we're talking about guys returning at full health, you know, or you know, past all the testing, all that kind of stuff. And it's just the nature of hamstring injuries that they do have a high re-injury rate at this point in time, unfortunately. The good news is that after those first 2 weeks, that re-injury risk does plummet almost. So it comes right down. I think in the third week, you're only talking about 4 to 5%. So, you know, out to sort of 1 in 20. And then it just continues continues to decrease, but a lot more gradually between about week 3 and about week 16, they find, I think. So around that, you know, 4 months post. And then it's right down to sort of, you know, almost baseline at that point in time. But yeah, so those first 2 weeks, it's not controversial at all. There is absolutely justification in avoiding Cleary if you absolutely need to, because you've got other problems. I think this question has sort of said, I have other trades that I need to make. You know, you might have used all your boosts, so you've only got 2 trades. You might need to build up money. You know, you might have gone down to a Sandon Smith type or something like that from the Roosters. You might need to build up cash to go from Smith all the way up to Cleary. So those kind of things, I mean, the matchup is hot. I'm expecting, why I'm planning on bringing Cleary back is I expect his performance to be right on the money from the time he is named. So it's not locked in that he's returning in round 20, but as soon as he is named, whether it's round 20 or 21, I'm absolutely bringing him in. I could see a situation where they leave him till round 21, but yeah, for the moment, I'm thinking he's back in round 20. I'm getting him because I expect his performance to still be normal Nathan Cleary. It's more that re-injury risk that you do have to worry about, particularly in those first couple of weeks. So yeah, I think it'll still be a tough watch if you're a non-Cleary owner when he is back, but you can have some solace that your players that you have in your team potentially will have a lower injury risk in those weeks. So your players will be safer to get through a full 80 minutes than a Nathan Cleary would in his first couple of weeks back from that hammy. Where are you at with Cleary? Are you going to sort of bring him in straight away if he's named?
Yeah, I would if I was in that situation. I've kept him the whole way through because I was trying to save some trades. So I've nursed him the whole way through because I was rotating with Mitch Moses to begin with. And then when he got named for Origin 2, I flicked him to Nico. So I've been able to sort of ride that out pretty well with just Nico and Cleary being on that bye together. So the Panthers have got the Dolphins, Bulldogs, Sharks, Storm, Manly, Titans, Eels, Cowboys. It's a pretty good run. If he's named round 20, you just got to pull the trigger and get him in my opinion. He might not be captaincy in that sort of sense. If you're probably between him or Nico, I'd probably be leaning towards Nico Hines there just from that respect. So I don't think he's probably someone you want to put the C on, particularly if he's got an early game in the round there. Round 20, he's got the Sunday game too. So he's sort of later in the round there to bring back. I don't know. If he gets named, he's someone you just got to get in your team. His ceiling is just so big. The Panthers are flying. They're going to be in that top four, well and truly, probably top two by the time it's all said and done. He's just a must-have.
Yeah, I in terms of the captaincy fight, I totally agree. If he's back, yeah, it'll be tough to captain him. The one thing I will say is that me personally, I went with trading in Joey Tappanay this week, which leaves me a front rower down this week, but I did it with something in mind. I kind of had something going in my head where Kalen Ponga, just looking here now, Kalen Ponga plays on Friday night against the Tigers this week coming. I wanted a free shot at the vice-captaincy loop. Like, that's why I went with Tappanay to have a player down next week potentially because, yeah, Kalen Ponga could just go massive there. So, yeah. But yeah, if then Ponga doesn't do anything, let's say he's not all that good, I'll consider Cleary if he's named, but yeah, I'll definitely be leaning more elsewhere just purely because of the safety of getting through the game, I think.
Very nicely said, Brian. Question number 2 from Patreon is about Sammy Walker. He still didn't play in New South Wales Cup yesterday. I think there was a tweet updated about that. Do you expect him to come back for the Roosters this week coming potentially, or do you think it's a little bit more murky whether he comes back at all this year?
Mate, I'd be shocked if he plays this week, to be honest. Like, the reports from Alan Katzman on Twitter was that he did the final training session with the New South Wales Cup side or with the Bears, I can't remember, and couldn't get through it because he's still struggling with that knee. So we're kind of like 10 weeks post-injury now for him, and he's still battling with symptoms. That, like, we were talking off air, like, when do you pull the trigger here? And, you know, do you shut him down for the year? Do you, like, obviously the worst case scenario is a reconstruction because you can go in and do a cleanup potentially to try and, you know, is there like some meniscal catching or something like that that's causing some symptoms? So for such a serious, you know, like, or such a significant surgery in terms of a reconstruction, you'd think they'd probably do a clean-up first to try and avoid, like, 9 months of rehab. But, yeah, like, 10 weeks post to still be battling with symptoms. I just continue to be concerned about him. I think even if he is named to play, that doesn't make him safe, in my opinion. Like, he could come back, play 25 minutes, and then his knee, like, he goes to change direction on his knee and it aggravates something, or, you know, some instability there, those kind of things. He's just not someone who I would look to invest in. I think if you're a drafter, once again, if he's named, you absolutely try and sell him to somebody who has no concerns. There's nobody surely with him in Classic, but he's just not someone who I would even consider, even if he starts getting hot. I think you're looking to, you know, go with Cleary and Nico in those spots, and I just wouldn't really consider Walker at this time.
There's two other things I sort of want to point out as well, Brian, and these are just sort of side stories to it, is we remember Sammy Walker played through the broken forearm last year in week one of the finals. This is not a guy who misses, you know, games of footy for no reason. I don't think you could question his toughness or his diligence to a rehab journey or anything like that. So I think that's important to keep in mind, is if people are like, oh, Sammy's just mailing it in, you know, what's going on? He's proven that he's played above and beyond, you know, exceptional injuries in the past. The other thing is, the Roosters weren't even picking him at the start of the year. So what's the push now to sort of get him back on the field now? Like, I know they're just slightly out of the eight. I don't see how the Roosters can make the eight. I think the issues are too big in that whole team. They've had too many injuries through the year. I just don't think they can pull it all together towards the end of the year. I just don't really understand, if he wasn't even good enough to be in your starting team, why is there this pressure for him to sort of get back, or this perceived pressure, I suppose. It might just be the way I look at it there, but I don't know. I just get this sort of bizarre vibe there with the Roosters, with what are they doing with Sam Walker? Is there any value there? Do they want to see him long-term there? I don't know. There's just too many things there that just make me really confused about that whole situation.
Yeah, no, I think it's valid. I think at this point, yeah, like, they are mathematically still in with it, and if you're a, you know, if you're a Roosters fan, or if you're in the Roosters, you want, you know, you want your best players there trying to get your team into the finals, so I get that. But this is a young guy who now 10 weeks post ACL sprain is still dealing with knee symptoms. I just, yeah, like, we spoke about it many weeks ago, it's a volatile injury. It can be anything from, you know, 4 to 6 weeks to reconstruction, 9 months. So, yeah, I just think I'm on high alert for him, you know, for news in the, you know, at some point being like, yep, Sam Walker, we're just shutting him down for the year, or we're giving him another month, or something like that. Because, yeah, I just don't have much confidence in the situation at the moment. It's too unpredictable for me. I think that's probably the big thing. When I say no confidence, it's not that he couldn't come back in 2 weeks' time and absolutely brain it, but it's just that is – the chance of that happening is like 20% on the spectrum of 100% being like the other – at the other end of the spectrum, there's a 10% chance that he needs a reconstruction and is out for, you know, 9 months. So there's not many players where, going through injury, there is such a wide range of outcomes for an injury. So, yeah, just a really, really, yeah, rotten situation.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Last question from Patreon here, Brian. It's a bit off topic. We're talking about the cricket, because the cricket has been red hot for the Ashes. Just gone. It's just such good watching at night time. I'm just frothing it. I'm getting limited sleep, but I'm just loving every second of it. Talking about Ben Stokes and his knee injury there, do you have any insights into Ben Stokes and the knee injury and what's going on there?
Mate, I'm going to throw straight back to you. Is the cricket enough? Hit me, because I know you've done a little bit of reading on it and you've got a bit of information. So what's your understanding on it?
Well, by a little bit of information, you're probably overselling it there, Brian, because I couldn't find anything super specific. So one article talked about, you know, it's been a long-standing chronic thing with tendonitis, whatever that means. You know, that's a fairly broad spectrum-y sort of type thing. One talked about a chronic degenerative thing. There was another one that mentioned cortisone injection. There was one that mentioned he had scans on it after the IPL just gone this year, which showed no significant concern or injury. when you look at Ben Stokes moving around, he almost looks like a, to use one of your terminologies there, Brian, he looks like an 80-year-old man getting out of a bath. Like, he just doesn't look any good, does he? But then, in the same breath, it's a bit of a GR because he looks like an arthritic 80-year-old man. And then he just steps in and just bombs us to all corners and hits 155 in the fourth dig and just makes us look absolutely silly. Oh, I don't really know. I think one thing you can sort of take from it is just from the outside looking in, it's his front leg when he lands. So it's the leg that translates most of the force when you're bowling. So I think when Brett Lee speaks about bowling rapid, he said, you know, when you're fast bowling, about 18 times your body weight gets translated through your front leg every time you bowl. So whether it's just something that Ben has had, you know, an accumulated sort of thing, if it's a chronic degenerative thing, if it's something that flares up on and off, is it a tendinopathy type thing? Is it a tendonitis type thing? It's really hard to know. It's certainly, he straps it up like you've never seen before and after play. Like, he's almost got this like mummified knee that looks like it almost prevents him significantly in his range of motion. And maybe that's because he needs to brace on it when he's bowling. And maybe that just is the way he needs to do it. Certainly doesn't look like it allows him too much freedom of movement when he's between the wicket or anything like that. Not that it really matters when you're just boshing blokes for six over their head. So, yeah, long story short, nothing really super specific there. I think we'll probably hear a bit more about it as the series finishes. I don't know what it means for him bowling moving forward the series. I guess the other thing that depends on what happens tonight. If England are done, he may well rest the next game or the next game after or something like that. If they're still alive, he'll probably, you know, keep pushing through potentially. It's really hard to get a good read on it, to be fair, because there's not really too much hard information about it. Because as you remember, his IPL stint was cut short this year where he didn't do a lot of batting and didn't do a lot of bowling because of that knee concern. And I think there might have been a few other niggles there that he was carrying. So it's been something that's been a bit of an ongoing thing. It looks like he's sort of just, you know, taking that warrior mentality and getting carried out on his shield, so to speak, for this series. So I don't know if there's anything more specific than that. If anyone's got any info, then definitely send it through. That'd be my advice. What about any other sort of words of wisdom there for Benny Stokes, Brian?
Yeah, man, I think to your point, that meniscus, you know, it's pretty worrisome for that kind of thing. So it's probably something that he's just going to have to continue to manage. He may have to miss games, but it's not something that I could see keeping him out. Probably more likely is that he plays but he doesn't bowl, would be my thing, is that, you know, he might be put in some positions. It'd take a lot for him to undergo surgery, I would say. You know, with those chronic meniscuses, they can just aggravate, inflame. You just got to deload them and then, you know, settle it down and load it back up again. So I would more go down that path at this point in time for sure. But off cricket, onto Supercoach, where we both had a pretty average week. You more so than me, thankfully, which is always a good thing to talk about. Mate, hit me with your wonderful score and what your trades are, well, what your plans are, because I think it's a big couple of weeks.
Yeah, I really, really copped one this week, and not in the way I normally like to cop one either. So when Origin teams were named, I was not in a good place because I was obviously running Cody Walker, AJ Brimson, Corey Horsburgh, and Gutho and Colin Matangi sort of came out of nowhere as well, which were guys I already had in my team. So I had five guys that were sort of suddenly Origin contenders and were not going to be available. So I ummed and ahed, do I blow up my team with three trades for guys that aren't really going to be in my team long term? And I thought, well, looking through who was available, I just didn't really like that approach. So I didn't make any trades. So I just sat on my trades this week and copped a score of 610. I was just like, you know what? I've just got to take the L this week. There's not really any keepers that I can identify. I've just got to ride that week off and ride things out until better days. So my plans on the trade front is Latrell and Dave Fifita in round 21. I've got a little bit of cash there. I'll probably maybe downgrade a guy this week to get a little bit more and look at getting Latrell and Dave Fifita in for round 21. If Latrell gets named, of course, you'd think by then he probably will be named. So they're probably my sort of imminent trade plans from that point of view. But yeah, I didn't really have the inclination to blow up my team just in light of those five guys getting named for Origin that were a little bit unexpected from that point of view. So Brian, you went a lot better than me this week, made three trades I see as well.
Yeah, mate, my tradeaholic in me is really coming back. Like, I just couldn't avoid it. The one thing I will say, I'm really proud of myself because I spoke about it so much on the pod last week and I did trade in Drinky. I just, like, the way I looked at it, I wasn't going to be able to get, like, multiple pieces of the Cowboys back line. Like, I really wanted Val, but I'm pretty happy with where I'm at in my centres. Like, I've got about six to seven guys now that Munro is looking pretty good as well, you know, that I can kind of play on matchups and they're all pretty gun territory kind of guys. So I just want a Drinky. Once again, you know, I'm in that spot. So I went Gutho to Drinky as probably my stupidest trade you could justify, but I just think it's a good heart pick. I love Drinky as a player, so I'm excited to watch him play. I made three trades, so I'm down to six left, but I plan on using four of those in the next 2 weeks, which is probably against what a lot of that's why we're not strictly a super coach podcast, because I know there's a lot of guys out there who will tell you that is madness. But I'm pretty happy with my depth. The only place after those four trades that I'll be struggling will be at hooker, because I'll just have Harry Grant and Sonny Luke. So I'll have to hold at least one trade sort of just in case Harry Grant goes down at any point. But in the next 2 weeks, I'm looking at bringing in Cleary, Harry Grant, Latrell and Cam Murray are my four trades. Now, Cam Murray, not a definite, but he is someone who I'm hoping I can go one of my second rows, like Jacob Preston, down to him and hopefully make like 50K out of it. And if I do my maths right, then that will help me afford Latrell from one of my centers. So,
bear in mind, Nanai, Brian, get him in there.
Yeah, that's a good point. But by then, who knows? Like, well, if Nanai misses this week, if Nanai misses this week, then potentially that price point would still be.
I think he's only 530 as well. He's pretty cheaply priced.
Yeah, but see, Cam Murray's like 460, mate, or something absolutely ridiculous. Like, I just couldn't believe how cheap Cam Murray was. And I'm just like, if I can downgrade, in inverted commas, a guy to Cam Murray and make enough money to then go up to Latrell, that's just something.
It's a no-brainer.
I don't know if I can pass that up. So that's my plans at this point in time. I did bring in Joey Taps as well. And I, as I said earlier, I did that on the understanding that I saw that, I don't know if I've got the balls to captain Kalyn Ponga first game of the round on a Friday night with his concussion concerns. I just could see that ending horribly for me. But this gives me the option. So I've got Tapanay, Horsburgh, Fainu, and Christian Welsh in the front row. So I'll play Christian Welsh this week. And I think as long as Sonny Luke doesn't get picked, then my auto emergency will be like a good player. Because I'll only have about 18 or 19 named this week, the way that it'll go, even with like Origin guys backing up and those kind of things. So that was kind of my tactic, was that, I looked at it and I was like, right, I want to be able to vice captain Kalyn, I can do that. Get in Taps, got his 90 points this week, which was epic. I was planning on saving that trade for Payne Haas, but Payne Haas was $100,000 more, and he was going to miss the next 2 weeks anyway. So I was like, well, I'll just go Taps and see how that goes. So yeah, that's where I'm at with it. I'm expecting a bit of a drop this week. I think I'm in the 900s or somewhere around there in terms of rank, but hoping that Drinky, I can bring him in. And you know, who's he got this week? The Seagulls. Yeah, I don't know whether that's a captaincy option for Drinky at Four Pines Park or Brookie Oval, but he's got some tasty matchups coming up where I'm hoping he'll be a nice point of difference for me.
Yeah, like your plans there, mate. I can't really give you too much grief over those ones. I just need to make some better selections on guys who are not going to come from the clouds and get picked for Origin. What do you reckon of the New South Wales team? Is it vibey enough for you? I know rugby league was built on vibe. It has been since 1908, but I don't get a vibe from the New South Wales team just as a staunch Queensland supporter. I don't know. I don't often get Freddie selections at the best of times, but this team is confusing to me for a lot of reasons. Brian, what was your read on it?
I wasn't hugely against it, except for like the Gutho and Reece Robson on the bench kind of confused me. But I was like to give Freddie all the credit in the world, I was, well, give him as much as I possibly can. I was like, well, you know, potentially he's got some sort of plan for Gutho here, like, you know. And then there was an interview today on the radio where apparently he just came out and was like, yeah, he's just there for injury cover. I don't really have a plan for him. And I'm just like, oh, man, like that really shot my vibe down, because I was like, well, shot my vibe up as a Queenslander, mind you. But you still try and, you know, I guess analyse it with some sort of, analytical mind. And, yeah, I just don't see, like, even when Queensland had those utilities on the bench, those back utilities, there was always a plan for them. Like, Caelan Ponga got named on the bench and came on and played 30 minutes in the middle, at, you know, in his debut, I think it was, or something like that. And, you know, there
yeah,
was
he played
still,
big minutes there, yeah.
Yeah, like, there's still a plan
50
there
straight, almost,
him.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm just a bit off that whole, like, not, like, naming this utility, but not... I really hope he's just playing ducks and drakes and there's something there for Gutho, because I'm like, I just don't know, especially because, for selfish purposes, Gutho's in my Supercoach side, and if you have picked him to just have him on the bench as injury cover, I'm like, God damn it, Freddie. Like, what are you doing to me? Like, that, those are points that I absolutely could have used for you to not just pick a dude and have him on the bench as injury cover. And potentially he's picked Gutho as a bit of a vibes guy. Like, Gutho is that whole, you know, if Gutho played for Queensland, he'd probably get picked every time because he's just got that heart, he's got that guts. You know, he might not be the most flashy and the most talented, but he just goes and goes and goes. So potentially he's there for that, but he's on the bench. Like, he's not going to be doing that. And there's no plan to bring him on except for if there's an injury. So, yeah, that's probably my biggest thing with it.
I just couldn't figure out as well the Cody Walker selection. It's curious to me that everyone's come out in the media and gone, oh, you know, Cody's been the best ball player in the comp for 3 years, 5 years. He's the best ball player I've seen since Cliffy Lyons. Everyone's giving him raps. And no doubt Cody can play. But he's been that way for the last 3 years and Freddie hasn't picked him. And in my mind, I'm thinking, well, if you're New South Wales and you're sort of hypothetically looking towards next year to look at like the guys you can build a nucleus around, surely Clear is your first pick. So if he's your seven, then Luai's your six, isn't he? Like, I just don't see them breaking up that combination. And if that's the case, then, well, where does Mitch Moses fit? Because he's getting picked for seven this game. Like, is he going to be there next year or not? Probably not, if Nathan Cleary is fit and ready. Then how does Cody Walker fit this year and next year in the long term? I don't see how that really works. I just think if Jerome's going to be the guy that partners Cleary, they're going to be your guys next year regardless. I would have picked Luai, and I probably would have given Nico a chance at seven as well to see if he's the guy that you might be able to work into a 14 role for the year following, potentially. I don't know. I really just couldn't figure out what the – is it a now selection or is it a future planning thing? Because, like, surely you've got to be having a little bit of an eye for next year. I hate to say, like, you're looking to next year when you haven't actually played this game and this one counts. But that to me was very confusing, right? I couldn't work that out for life of me what the actual thought process with that was, because, you know, if Cody was your best ball player and they're talking him up like, you know, he's this and he's that and he's so good, he's always been that dude.
Yeah.
So why has he not had a jersey for 3 years?
Yeah.
Until this one? Like, he hasn't played for 3 years. I don't get it. I don't really get why there's this infatuation with Cody Walker now, because your attack was inept in the first two games. Is that a team selection issue? Is that a coaching issue? I think Joey Johns is running the attack there, so you've got an immortal running in the attack. What's the cause of the issues there? I don't know. I couldn't figure that one out. What was your thoughts on the six conundrum?
Yeah, I think, like, if you thought all those things about Cody, I don't care about the quad injury, you should have picked him for game two. Like, the quad injury isn't enough to keep him out of game two for me. Like, I understand not wanting to carry injuries into games and all that kind of stuff, but with the series on the line, if all those things are true about Cody, which I think they are, then you pick him for game two. That's my biggest thing, is that you just pick him. You know that he's a seasoned veteran and he can plonk himself on that left edge. You play him, you start Damien Cook. I mean, you went into that week hoping for Latrell Mitchell, like, to be fit, so you would have hoped to have Latrell at left centre. But if you don't have Latrell at left centre, then you have Campbell Graham, or, like, you know, like, you have someone, you have some sort of nucleus there of the South guys, you know, to work around. So, yeah, that was probably my biggest thing. I just couldn't believe they didn't pick him in game two, if all these things are true.
It's a really hard one to figure out, isn't it? I think, you know, to Freddie's defense, like, I think Jack Whiten retiring before the series was a massive stitch up. And then Latrell getting hurt and Tommy getting hurt, I think that were big, big, big issues. I think for next year, I don't know what this sort of that squad's going to look like, but I think when you've got those guys that you've sort of picked an axe this year, I don't think that instills a lot of confidence in your team moving forward either. Like, I think how many guys were selected for one game this year or two games? So DeVita was once, Nico was once, Hudson was a couple, Tyson Frizzell was a couple, Steffo Tuukkamano was a couple, Abbey Corrissell was injured, obviously, but then you got Reece Robson in for a couple, Damien Cook for a couple, Luai for a couple, Moses for a couple, Cody Walker for one. Probably missed someone in there as well, haven't I? But, you know, even Bradman Best maybe for this game. Is he going to be the guy there next year? I don't know. It's a really hard one to work out, isn't it?
Mate, all I can say is wonderful to be a Queenslander this time of year. That's that's where I'm at with it. We're sitting good. We're only changing guys at the moment because of the injury, which is, you know, a good place to be. And, yeah, I think, yeah, I do keep coming back to I'm just a little bit sus. I think Queensland deserve to be major favourites, but I just think it is hard when you have already got the series wrapped up. Do you make those little efforts? Do you, you know, does Lindsay Collins still run through on a bomb past, you know, nine guys and jump in the air when we're already up 2-0? Like, that's going to be the thing. Can Billy do it? I think if anyone, you know, if anyone can, he's going to bring it out of them. But, yeah, that's going to be the most interesting thing for me.
Yeah, that'll be good. I wonder what the incentives are on play there for the Queensland boys. Surely Cam and Billy have got something cooked to incentivise these guys to go out there and rip and tear to get 3-0, surely.
Yeah, 100%, mate. All right, guys, that's a wrap for this week. Look, if you like the pod, give us a review, recommend to a friend, all that usual stuff. You want more info like this, patreon.com/NRLphysio. Yeah, this time next week we'll have close to a full round of games to talk about. We've got three teams on bye next week, but we'll hopefully not too many origin injuries to talk about, but we'll cover that as well. And James, have a good week, mate. Another week the Bronx will be without Reece Walsh, potentially Payne Haas. Who have they got? They got the Doggies.
Harrigan.
Jeez, no. the Doggies, mate. They're on the up, so could be a bit of an upset brewing there.
We'll be sweet, don't worry.
Love it, guys. All right, have a good week. And as always, up the mighty, mighty Redcliffe Dolphins.
Suspected broken left fibula.
Suffering syndesmosis.
After that stem cell injury that he's come back from.
That's about it, mate.